life's greatest questions have always been, who am I? Where did I come from? Why am I here? Where am I going? You are about to see and hear one of the most significant messages given to us from God.
The right knob. I'm reaching for the vocal knob and cutting myself down as I meant to cut down the music. It's quite unprofessional. Hell of a way to start the show. Anyway, what's up, guys? This is the shoot right here, Sunday, July or June 30th. I've already got July on the brain. Wow, this month just flew by so fast. I didn't even know where the hell the month went. But yeah, so you can see there, I'm a little trigger happy with the month of July, but it's coming up tomorrow, so it's already pretty much here. Make sure you visit our website, theshootonline.com, and follow me on Twitter at Gary Cantrell. And we've got a big, big show planned for you all today. In about 15 minutes or so, give or take, we're going to talk to former TNA play-by-play man Todd Kennelly. He's had quite a bit to say to us since his release and talking about all kinds of various topics. So I think you guys are really going to genuinely enjoy this interview with Todd. And then also a new addition to today, just found out earlier today, we're going to talk to Tom the Tree Man, a friend of the show, somebody who has not been on the show in about 3 years or so. And yeah, wow, I guess it'll be interesting to see what he's got to say. I was hanging out with him and Augie and Alan and Ashton over on the Metal Church this morning on the mix, and we were talking about all kinds of stuff and hanging out. It was a lot of fun to really just talk with those guys and see what they had to say. And so we'll talk to Tom one-on-one this afternoon in the second half of the show. We'll see everything he's got to say. I want to make sure I point you guys' attention to our brand new URL. We've made it easier to get to the podcast site for, you know, obviously when you can't listen live. We're hoping that you already have it subscribed to in your favorite, RSS reader or what have you, iTunes or whatever, Android or, you know, whatever you have. But if you don't, if you're one of these people that's just going right to the podcast source, the new URL, it's easy to bookmark. It's just simply theshootondemand.com. So right now, I've got three URLs that I'm hoping that you guys will bookmark as it pertains to this show, and that is theshootonline.com. First and foremost is where we post everything that's going on with the show, and it really needs a redesign. I mean, a real overhaul, redesign. I mean, it's really just a blog site. You know, it's a WordPress site, but it's like a placeholder. I'm hoping to, you know, get something going with that and just get a better look to it. But for now, it is what it is. And then, of course, theshootlive.com, which is where we're running all the replays of the show. We have basically all 184 episodes that run in order over and over and over again. And then every other show, we insert the latest show. I said this last week, but I'll say it again. I have to give full 100% credit to Tom Likas for this idea. He told us, you know, 2 or 3 months ago, he said people like to have, you know, a station, that whole station feel when it comes to, you know, your content. So like for him, he replays his latest show all day long. So once he's done going live, then that show will play 24 hours over and over and over again. Now, I think for his archives, they're hidden behind a, you know, like a paywall. You have to subscribe to those. But for us, I mean, let's face it, a lot of those shows are from Blog Talk Radio, and those were just terrible audio quality. But I mean, I think they were good shows. So, you know, we just put them all out there for you guys to you know, have at it and listen. And they play in order, in chronological order. And then every time a show finishes, then the next show that plays is whatever the most recent show is. So basically, if you are one of those people, and I don't know how big that audience is, but if you're one of those people that likes to basically just, you know, tune in and see, you know, just what's going on with the shoot, every 2 hours or so, the latest show will be playing. So, and this show from last week was very long, and I'll get to that in a moment. I do want to address that because a lot of people buzzing about that. But I want to thank Matt Stryker, who we interviewed earlier in the week on Tuesday. Now, we were supposed to post this today. It would have been, you know, part of this show. And, you know, when you're doing radio, you got to be real strategic about, you know, what you do. And I'll just say it flat out. I mean, look, the guy had done a couple of interviews. I mean, he's making the rounds. He's everywhere. You know, he's doing a ton of interviews. But as it pertains to the wrestling website world, you really only heard about one or two. I think I even saw some guy send in a recap for his interview and it hadn't even aired yet. I don't know why the hell would you do that, but that's probably why you're on Blog Talk Radio, I guess. But that's not smart. So what we did was we interviewed the guy, and as soon as we were done interviewing the guy, it went right up on the site, and then we had a recap ready to go to send out to the various wrestling media. And I want to thank all the sites that picked it up. I want to thank the one asshole who posted my recap and then didn't post the link. And, you know, I don't know why in the world that you would just post a recap to an interview and then not even put the link up so people can listen to it. I mean, think about it. If you're one of the probably 5 or 6 people that's going to this clown's website and you are, you know, let's say you find this interview compelling and you're like, okay, I want to listen to it. How do I listen to it? Well, the shithead who runs that website, and I'm not going to drop his name, but this guy who runs his website said, it's not really important to post that link. And I even tweeted him very nicely. I said, look, you know, thank you so much for covering my interview with Matt Stryker. Here's a direct link. Perhaps your viewers would like to know that link so that they can click on it and find it. It's all about, when you have a website, it's all about making it easy to get people where they want to go. So the recap itself brings people to your website. If you tweet about it, so then, you know, they click on the link and it goes to, you know, whatever your website is, and then they can read the recap. But they're like, you know, maybe I want to hear the interview, but nah, he just didn't find it important enough to post a link. So I'm hoping that he'll never post any of my recaps again. And if I find a recap on his site, I'm going to ask him to take it down. Cause I don't appreciate that. But to the 99% other of the wrestling media that took this recap and put it up on their site with a link, I do appreciate all of you. Thank you so much. I could list each and every one of you, but I'd be here for an hour. I mean, it was everywhere, and we did record numbers. You know, we talk about John Heidenreich 7 years ago being our biggest downloaded show in the history of the shoot, and I'm looking at the numbers from the Matt Stryker and then also the Derek Four, a.k.a. Chad Baxter interview from Sunday's show. And the two of these interviews are very close to that Heidenreich number, which would then unseat him from the top most listened to interview in our show's history. And I mean, we did for the month or two or three or whatever that we've been back, actually 6 months, what am I saying? So for the 6 months that we've been back, these two interviews are definitely leading as far as the most listened to interviews in the show's history. And we did record numbers since being back, and I want to thank everybody who checked it out. And then I got a bunch of people that had followed me over on Twitter at Gary Cantrell. There were people who were sending emails just saying, look, we really enjoyed this interview. Wow, can't wait to hear more. So I want to thank all those people who reached out, because, you know, so many people, you know, there's a lot of people who listen and then you just don't hear from them. They're just kind of like silent listeners. They just want to listen and enjoy. And that's great. But I love the people who just say, man, I really want to reach out to this guy and tell him how much I like the interview. So I like to get, you know, feedback like that. I do greatly appreciate that. So thank you to that. And then a lot of people, wow, talking about this three and a half hour show we did last week with Alan Martin. And, you know, wow, man, I could not believe that we went that long. I mean, when we got done talking to Derek Four, we were going to talk a little bit of payback and then we were going to be done. Like, that was the plan. In fact, I had asked Alan in the middle of the show. I said, hey, man, you know, do you have a few more minutes? Let's talk about payback. Next thing I know, like 2.5 hours after that, we're still going. And I mean, people, I've heard this past week from all kinds of people, you know, in terms of, you know, people who used to listen to the show a long time ago. And I do appreciate that. I think it's great for those people who came back and checked out the show. And that's what I was hoping, you know, people were going to do. I was hoping that they were going to, you know, seek the show out and at least check out this one. You know, if nothing else, if they don't check out, you know, all the great interviews that we've done and other things, I would say that I would hope that they would have, you know, at least checked out this one. So if you've got the time, if you haven't, if you said, my God, 3 hours, are you guys freaking nuts? And then you didn't listen, then I would say, go back, take the 3.5 hours and listen to it. Because Al and I really connected. We didn't even just talk wrestling. We were talking about all kinds of crazy stuff, man. We were just riffing, basically. I mean, he was talking about banging cougars. He was talking about, you know, losing a ton of weight, which is something that I can identify with, finally. I mean, we were just talking about stuff all over the spectrum, man. I mean, we were just all over the place talking about stuff. And then after I got done doing 3.5 hours with Alan, I was interviewed for a podcast called Sadly Lacking Radio, and I want to give Jonathan and his crew over there, they're on Twitter, at Sadly Lacking. I taped an hour with this guy. This interview is going to be up, I believe it's this week, maybe next week, but I'm thinking it's this week upcoming, and he wanted to talk to me about the show, and, you know, he does a lot of DC area. He's from Australia, but he does... he's interviewed a lot of radio people in DC, and he and I got to talking about some of my history with DC radio personalities. And yeah, so if you guys want some insight on all that stuff, I highly recommend to check out this interview. It was kind of cool to be on the other side of the mic, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, I've interviewed several people since coming back, but actually being interviewed was a whole different animal, and I had a lot of fun, and I think you guys will enjoy it too. So, let's do this. Why don't we do this? Because we've got the Todd Kennelly. I need to reset so we can get into this whole Todd Kennelly thing. So let's take just a quick break and we'll regroup and we'll come back and we'll talk to Todd Kennelly and see what he's got to say. So you're listening to The Shoot, RadioFoodBar.com. We will be right back.
You're
are back. And we've got a very special guest on the line. Todd Kennelly, known best for his time on Impact Wrestling as the play-by-play guy. He's called the action not just for pro wrestling shows, but also some MMA. And you can catch him calling the action for Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Head on over to HollywoodWrestling.com to check that out. Todd, welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. And, you know, I, of course, let's just get this out of the way just so we can just get it out there. You know, TNA, you were released by them recently. What happened there, Todd?
Well, you know, after spending about 7 months there and some change, on the day of Slammiversary, I met with Bruce Pritchard, and he just told me that that was going to be it for the time being. When I was brought in, I was brought in, with them saying, hey, in essence, we're giving you a tryout. That tryout ended up being calling the first hour live with Jeremy Borash, which is one heck of a tryout, you know.
Yeah, way to go.
Fire. But, you know, and after about 3 weeks of that, it was at the Turning Point pay-per-view where they threw me in with Tanae and Taz and took a shot at the three-man team, and it really, I think over that time, was kind of an experiment. They just wanted to see how it worked, and, I think for the most part, they were happy with it, but from what I'm being told, it was basically a cost-cutting measure, right. and also they saw an ability just to streamline back to a two-man team, and during my time there, I'd never come to terms with the contract, so I think, if there was an announcer they were going to cut, I was the easy target out of the three because I was never under contract. But, it was definitely a good experience, and it was under good terms, and if, the right circumstances come along, it seems like the door would be open to return.
That's terrific to hear, Todd. I mean, the thing about it is, and no disrespect to Tanae or Taz, but I mean, you were like the fresh voice. I liked your work there, and I just find it unfortunate that they had to cut you so soon. And let's go back to that whole thing where you were teaming up with Borash, and then they were kind of doing Tanae and Taz in the second hour. What'd you think of that whole thing? I thought it brought an interesting dynamic to the show.
I liked it. I think they were kind of going back to the old Nitro style of having the dual teams, and 2 hours maybe seems a little bit quick to do that and split it up between two announced teams. But yeah. I think it was good. I think, like you said, it was a fresh perspective, fresh voice. I really enjoyed working with JB. He was, I've got nothing but good things to say about him. He was so helpful on that first day because, again, I really didn't know what I was getting myself into, and then. Sure. Kind of found out, out of nowhere that we were going on live. So we sat together that day, and he put some matches up on his laptop, and we called him just trying to go through the motions and get some chemistry going, and he kind of showed me the ropes and showed me around the impact zone. But then after that, kind of three-week trial period where they made the switch to the three-man team, he and I continued to do Explosion together, which is their international one-hour show. So, it features one new match each week.
Right.
And we called that. And, I really had a blast working with JB. And if they, if they ever do add a second show that would, in essence, be the SmackDown to their Impact, I would love to work with JB again. Or obviously Matt Stryker's floating around out there now, too. And I think he and I could be a phenomenal broadcast team as well. So, I'm excited for what might happen down the line. We'll see.
Yeah, I actually interviewed Matt yesterday talking about leaving, and he definitely, he seemed like he was, hoping that the door was being left open for, for a return to WWE possibly, but I wouldn't rule out TNA by any stretch. And, I wanted to ask you about this because I talked to him about this yesterday. When guys tend to, some guys tend to, when they get released, they go out on the internet and they just trash whoever they're working for. Obviously, this is not something you've done because you left on good terms, but his situation is a little bit different. What do you think about guys that go out there and just, it just seems like they don't care if they ever get hired again. What do you think about that?
I can understand the frustration. you know, and I can understand having some animosity and bad feelings, but, you know, especially if your hope and plan is to make a good career out of it in professional wrestling, sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it, there's not a whole lot of viable options out there and places to do it and really, you know, make a good living doing it. And, you know, I just think that it's poor judgment to go out there and burn a bridge because you're eliminating one of your few options.
Yeah.
And, and for me, again, there's really no hard feelings. I am, you know, certainly frustrated because I did feel like I was doing a good job there. I felt like I was starting to get my traction and felt like I, you know, really helped balance out that broadcast team. I thought we had a good thing going, you know, with me kind of being more the traditional play-by-play. Tanay obviously been there from day one. He's got every stat imaginable.
Right.
And Taz, you know, in his kind of heel announcer role, I thought it was clicking and working. I think we were really starting to get our groove. And so it's like jumping out of a car when you're going 100 miles an hour. It's like, I went from calling, you know, arguably their second biggest pay-per-view of the year to vanishing. So I can understand the frustration, but look, you know, I like you mentioned at the top of the program, I've done a lot of stuff. I started at UPW, and I was there with a lot of the guys that are TNA now, and I called some of Cena's first matches. I've done some MMA, I've done this, I've done that, but I mean, it was TNA that really put me on the map.
Sure.
I mean, only real hardcore fans probably knew who I was before that opportunity on Impact Wrestling, and so, you know, I've got nothing but gratitude for the spotlight they put me in, and I think eventually, you know, I'll find a way to capitalize on that.
Yeah. Do you think that Taz or Tanay resented any way in the fact that you were kind of just thrown into their team that, you know, they've been together for so long and TNA, you know, they inserted you in there. And while, yes, you guys got great at it, the three of you, do you think initially there was any resentment there?
You know, sure, and understandably so. I mean, it, obviously, change is always going to be difficult. And again, it was something that really kind of happened quickly. You know, I was brought in first. They had to deal with JB and I calling the first hour, so that, you know, cut them back to calling, you know, 1 hour of Impact. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, you know, really without any warning, it was the day of the pay per view. All right, now we're going to try this on for size. Mm-hmm. And for guys that it's hard to develop chemistry, and certainly instantly, it's nearly impossible to do that. And for two veteran broadcasters that, you know, have worked with a number of people, I mean, for years, you know, Tanay worked with Shivani and Heenan and got his groove on Nitro, and Taz worked, you know, a lot with Cole, and then the two of them came together and developed their own chemistry and a real conversational type of commentary. And now all of a sudden somebody's kind of thrown in that mix and it can really throw off your timing. So I can understand that. And yes, I think there was at first. And I definitely sensed that and felt like I had a lot to prove and felt like there was definitely some tough love there.
Sure.
And I had to keep my guard up a little bit on air because, you know, you never knew what was going to be coming my way from Taz and at times from Tanay, but I really think it was just tough love too. I think that they were kind of trying to test me and see what I was made of, and I think that I passed that test, and in the end, you know, they really worked hard to teach me a lot, and I think I got a lot of it out of the experience. And that last day, you know, when I had gotten the word the day of Slammiversary, the three of us got together and they even said, hey, you know, do you even want to go out there, you know, are you all right?
Right.
And I said, no, you know, this is one more opportunity for me to go out and prove myself. And so we all kind of looked at each other and we all agreed that we were going to go out there and kick some ass and have a great broadcast. And under the circumstances, especially, I think that, you know, I feel that we did.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hell of a show. And, you know, I want to go back to what you were talking about, you know, having to work to get the chemistry, you know, when you put guys together. I mean, take WWE, for example, when they took JR out of that spot and put in Michael Cole. Now, while Michael Cole individually is a great broadcaster and Jerry the King Lawler is a great broadcaster, when they put the two together, they weren't quite, let's say, the best initially. And then now they've thrown in JBL in the mix. And let me ask you this as well. You know, for your personal preference, a two-man team versus a three-man team, what do you prefer when you're watching wrestling?
Watching wrestling, I don't mind a three-man team so long as they can get the pacing right and not step all over each other and not, in essence, either bicker too much or kind of just repeat the same thing that one of the other two said.
Right.
And that's why I think it worked well with us, and I wish it was still ongoing, because the roles were really delineated. You know, I mean, it was clear who was who. So I like the three-man team, as long as it runs smoothly as a fan. I think it's a good thing. I mean, but growing up, I'm an old-school fan, so right. I grew up, I loved, Gorilla and Jesse Body Ventura calling Mania.
Yes.
I mean, just the give and take. For me as a wrestling broadcaster, I mean, people will say JR, people will say Gordon Soley. For me, it was always Gorilla Monsoon. I just thought he brought such an aura to the matches. So I think the purist in me probably prefers the two-man team as a fan, right. But right now, the three-man team, it's very sports-oriented. I mean, if you watch, it kind of has that Monday Night Football feel, and I think as long as everybody plays their role and has a voice, I think the three-man team can be very effective
right.
as well.
And you're really taking me back.
It's certainly easier to be on a two-man team. I can tell you that for
right.
certain. But, leading into my time at Impact, I was, doing a lot of stuff for Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and we were working a three-man team, so at least I was kind of uniquely prepared, for that type of timing.
Sure. You brought me back with that whole Jesse and Gorilla thing. I remember, and I've watched, probably the first five or six WrestleManias more than any of them, because I loved listening to those two bicker at each other while they would try to call. The heel would cheat, and then Jesse would try to defend it, and then Gorilla would just, he'd go off. I mean, it was great to listen to those two talk together. It was terrific.
Oh, it was great. I don't know how you chip with this guy, Gorilla Monsoon. It was great. But they never did it to a point where it took away from the talent of the match. They
right.
had they had it down. They got it right for sure.
When
there's so many just classic calls that will still just resonate, in your head today. And even then, when the face would win, Jesse would eventually come back around, and have to give credit where credit's due. So those guys, I think if I had to pick a favorite team, as a wrestling fan, it would be them.
I'd loved how, they'd be in the middle of an argument and then a big spot would come up and they would get right back into it instantly. And, they would rather if the match was ending or something like that, they'd get right back into it. It was great. So,
yeah.
Wow. Man, you're bringing me back today, man. This is great. You're making me remember the old days. Now, tell me about this championship wrestling from Hollywood. As somebody, I'm somebody that watches, mainly just WWE and TNA, and I get the idea that a lot of listeners, not most of them, but a lot of them are probably very similar. So, sell us a little bit on this and tell us about it and, what we can expect when we watch this show.
Great talent. It's the old school kind of studio wrestling format, mm-hmm. and it is, the emphasis is on the bell to bell. Sure, you're going to see some storyline, you're going to see some stuff happen backstage, but it really is about the in-ring work, and they've got some great talent there. Austin Aries was there for quite a while, had a great rivalry mm-hmm. with Scorpio Sky, who TNA fans might know as Mason Andrews, or WWE fans might know as Harold from the anger management skit. But they had some great matches. It was great to call those Austin Aries matches right before he made the jump to TNA and has done so well. Sean Ricker, who's on the Hero now, has been a fixture at Championship Wrestling from Hollywood for years. So there's just, you're going to see some great in-ring work, and you're going to see guys that are certainly, I think, going to be performing on a big stage, in a matter of time.
Right. So how did you get back with these guys? Did they find out that you got released and they gave you a call, or were you kind of out there seeking, how did you get back with them?
Well, it was one of those things. They just so happened to have a taping, I think the weekend after Slammiversary,
mm-hmm.
and the news broke, and they reached out right away and said, hey, you want to come back and do some work with us, and Dave Marquez, who produces that show and runs it, also does amateur MMA promotion out here in California called Get Down MMA. So he had a an MMA show that needed to be called too. So it really did help because, you know, I was certainly frustrated right after, but it was great because I was able to get right back on the saddle. I called an MMA show, and then that next weekend called Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. They had a tag team steel cage match. It was great, and it just it felt good, you know, to kind of have that validation of, look, I'm not going to, you know, let this get me down. I know it's just a bump in the road, and I'm going to keep the momentum going and keep doing what I love. And it gave me a chance to do that, which was great.
Yeah, I'm still amazed that you went out and called Slammiversary and was able to do it so well, because I know that, like, you know, at my day job, if they you know, got me right before I walked in the door and said, hey, you know, look, we got to talk, and then, by the way, you know, do you want to work all day? I mean, I could only imagine how that is. So, I mean, man, you're stronger than me, for sure.
Yeah, you know, well, I think that, you know, a lot of people didn't know, you know,
right,
until afterwards. And the talent was great, and a lot of the talent has been vocal on social media, too, mm-hmm, just saying that they enjoyed the way I called their matches. And you know, but after the event, when word got out, I mean, that was kind of the sentiment from everybody was like, man, I don't know how you went out there and did that, you know, and
yeah,
kept your composure. And I will say this, it was tough because, like, right off the bat, you know, Slammiversary is the anniversary show for the company. So
yeah,
right off the bat, I've got to, you know, on the on camera, I've got to have a big smile on my face. Oh, the 11 year history, and, you know, what a momentous occasion for this company, this great company. And, you know, and it was tough. It was tough to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had called the episodes of Impact leading up, you know, and I thought I owed it to myself to go out there and do it. And I thought I owed it to the talent, you know, because we had all worked hard to build those matches. I knew it was going to be a great show. And, you know, there's no way I was not going to go out there. And like I said, I saw it as one more opportunity. But,
right,
yeah, after the fact, you know, top to bottom, everybody that came up to me, you know, I think I earned a lot of people's respect by going out there and doing what I did.
You know, TNA seems like, you know, one big family. They seem very close. I've interviewed Daniels and Kazarian before. We had them on the show a few weeks ago, actually promoting Slammiversary. The whole company puts off a vibe like a big, you know, tight-knit family. How many friends did you make there, you know, in your time there? How close were you with the talent?
Very close. And everybody, and you're right, and that vibe is the way it is. You know, everybody... Mm-hmm. There really wants to see the company grow. You know, it's a great opportunity to have another place to go and apply your craft, and it, you know, everybody just seems happy to be there, and it really is the team effort. It's not so much of looking out for yourself and, you know, trying to have eyes on the back of your head like it might be other places.
Sure.
Everybody really does seem to be working together, and for me, you know, it seemed like I fit in there, and it seemed like home, because, you know, when I started off at UPW back in, you know, around 2000, Kazarian was there, Daniels was there, Samoa Joe was there, Tara was there, Mike Knox. So when I came into Impact, finally, I mean, to me, it wasn't that imposing pressure like, oh, now I got to really go out there and prove myself. It was like going to a reunion.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and everybody came up like, oh, you know, it's about time, Kenley, it's about time you got here. So it was instantly comfortable for me. Plus, you know, I'd had the opportunity to work with Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan on Celebrity Championship Wrestling,
yeah,
and on their tour of Australia in 2009. So, you know, and Eric was very vocal in supporting me, and was really the guy that pushed along with Bruce Prichard to get me in. So, I mean, I came in with quite a bit of confidence just because, you know, the people that were pushing for me and the friends that I had there already. But
right,
to your point, or, you know, really enjoyed meeting talent that I hadn't met before there, like Joseph Park and AJ Styles. And, I mean, pretty much everybody there I really enjoyed getting to know and working with, and really, really enjoyed the experience. So, again, it was very comfortable, and that's why it's so hard to step away. And I just hope that, you know, I'll be back there at one point, because it just seemed like the right fit for me.
Certainly, certainly. You brought up Celebrity Championship Wrestling. How do you approach that? You know, because it's a reality show. Do you approach that any differently than, you know, calling like a live event?
You know, it was interesting, and it was one of those things. I mean, on that show, I did ring announcing and work behind the scenes, but then I also went in and laid down commentary tracks that eventually, you know, Bubba, I think, fed off of to lay down the commentary. He basically did a read on what I had done. But yeah, that really, in terms of when I went in and laid some commentary down for it, it was very different because instead of just calling the match, you know, it becomes like the competition show, you know, almost, you become like it's like you're calling Olympic figure skating or something. Well, how are the judges might deduct a point there, or what, you know, if they slip up or the timing's off a little bit or they're, you know, a little dangerous in the ring or whatever. So it made it challenging, and it was hard because I wanted to really just be able to get into each character and call the match the way I'm accustomed to calling a match, but sure, you can't completely neglect the competition side of the show as well. So it was just a really interesting project to be part of, and you know, it was a lot of fun day in, day out being on the set for that show, and I wish it could have continued because I think it would have been interesting to see what kinds of other celebrities could have been involved, and you know, it was just a really enjoyable experience.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds very interesting. Something else I wanted to ask you about, when you were with UPW, you were part of the creative process at that time?
I was, yeah.
Wow, what was that like?
It was good, you know, and it was good to be able to branch out and kind of get my feet wet in various aspects of the business. And when you work for a smaller group like that, you know, just like when you'll hear guys that were in ECW talking about they were sending out the merch and doing this and flyering. I mean, when you work for a group like that, you end up wearing a lot of hats.
Right.
And, so it was great hands-on training, and yeah, I got to do a lot of writing, a lot of booking, and putting together show formats and the such. And it served me well because then you know, down the line after that, I ended up working with Rikishi and Company at Knox Pro and doing tours out in Europe for NWE, and then on the Hogan tour in 2009, I also did the creative and did put together the formats, and which was like a dream come true, you know, getting to work with a lot of the guys that I grew up watching and loving, and you know, putting shows together that I, as a wrestling fan, knew that I would like, and the fans really enjoyed themselves.
Now keep that creative hat on for just a moment. I want to ask you, do you see anything that, you know, that sticks out like a red flag that is missing today in either of the two big companies?
I would just say, you know, and I think it's starting to mount a comeback, is, I love seeing different, you know, wrestlers should be different sizes, different, you know, top to bottom, different characters, just colorful, and you know, it should not ever come off as cookie cutter, because what, you know, might entice one fan may not work for another.
Right.
So I'm loving the fact that, you know, a guy like Daniel Bryan, that I've had the honor of calling some of his matches here and there throughout the years, you know, is finally, his work ethic and everything else and his talent is on display, and he's, you know, on his way back up to becoming a main eventer.
He's red hot right now.
He is. He is. I mean, and he's so fun to watch. I mean, it's just, you can't help but get caught up in that kind of manic energy when he gets rolling in the ring. And I'm just so happy that a guy, you know, that doesn't have that you know, kind of prototypical WWE look is really excelling, and that his hard work and his ability is able to transcend, you know, kind of those limitations. So the way I look at it is this, you know, I was a fan, you know, I really came up kind of watching in the 80s, and I look back to, like, you know, the Royal Rumbles back in that period when they would do those short little promos of you know, each guy, and it's like, oh, and, you know, 29 other guys are going to be going over the top. And it would cut from, you'd have the model with his, you know, with the arrogance canister and the sweater around his neck, and then it would cut. You know, then it would cut to Earthquake, you know, stomping around, and then it would cut to Tatanka, and it would, like, you know, I mean, it was such a colorful, just the pageantry was there, you know, and you had Hulk, and you had Jake, and you had Savage, and you had all these incredible characters.
Right.
That, to me, just speaks volumes. That, to me, is what pro wrestling is. Just everything under the sun, you know, all bets are off, anything goes. And just the variety of characters, I think, is something that I think, if anything, is lacking. But it's starting to mount a comeback, and I think it needs to, because at the end of the day, I don't think pro wrestling can necessarily take itself too seriously. It needs to be fun.
Right.
You know, it needs to be entertaining.
Yeah. Let me take you back here to these Royal Rumble era. Just a quick sidebar question. Out of all those in the early era, which one was your favorite? I have to know.
In terms of the Royal Rumble itself, or the talent,
let's just take the whole event there. You know, that let's combine the match, the undercard. If you had to pick one of those early Royal Rumbles, which one is your favorite?
Oh man, that's on the spot. That's a tough call.
Yeah, man.
I am. You know what? I don't remember exactly what year it was, but I remember one Rumble back in the day opened up with the Rockers and the Orient Express, and I just remember thinking, 91. Man, that was that was just a phenomenal tag team match and the way to kick it off. You know, obviously then with Flair going the distance,
and
what a great performance. And Bobby Heenan on commentary was just unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, that was great. Things that stick out in my mind too, obviously Hogan and Warrior, their confrontation. I mean, how huge was that? You know, leading into WrestleMania, and just the fact that you had these two superpowers, these two, you know, mega faces going head to head, and you know, the ring's cleared and it's just the two of them. You know, that's another great moment. But the Rumble, I mean, year in, year out, obviously WrestleMania is a phenomenal event and it's the highlight of the year. But for me, I always get such a kick out of the Royal Rumble. I think it's really probably my favorite WWE event of the year.
Oh, yeah, hands down. Yeah, 92 for me, I think that was, and I'm kind of partial to that because that's when I first really started watching, you know, full-time as a child. But that, yeah, I mean, that was the one, man. That was a good one. I got a few more here for you, if you've got a few more minutes for me.
Sure.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about the MMA calling. You've done some work for Elite XC. You know, what was that like, calling MMA versus, you know, calling pro wrestling?
I really enjoyed it, and I still do. And I think that, you know, calling both has really helped me in both realms. In terms of calling MMA, mm-hmm. You know, being able to kind of bring a little bit of that storytelling aspect into it. I mean, when I call MMA, I do my best to sit down with the fighters and really find out what makes them tick and get their stories. And, you know, whenever, obviously, sometimes an MMA fight will be over in 30 seconds and you don't have time to use all that stuff, but I really like when I have an opportunity to kind of tell the background information on the fighter. So I kind of think that calling pro wrestling has helped me when I call MMA, because I kind of borrow a little bit, and vice versa. When I'm calling pro wrestling and somebody, you know, gets in a mounted position, starts throwing punches, you know, I'll call it as, into a full mount, you know, now ground and pound offense, like I'll borrow terminology from MMA and use it when I call pro wrestling. I think the boom of the popularity of MMA, you see more of a crossover between the two worlds. I mean, you see a guy like King Mo, and obviously he's, you know, be working with TNA as well, but you see the grandiose entrances. And on the flip side, in wrestling, you got guys like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk that can really weave a lot of MMA technique into their professional wrestling performance. And so I think it's great that the two worlds can kind of borrow from one another, and I definitely do that in my broadcasting as well.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because there are so many people out there, and I just think that they're nuts when they say this, when they say that pro wrestling and MMA are so far apart, like how dare anyone put them in the same sentence? And I think that's just ridiculous. There is so much crossover to be had, and I think you nailed it on what you just said.
Yeah, no, I think it, you know, the two can really complement each other, and there are guys that obviously can make that transition, you know. It'll be really interesting to see how King Mo does, you know, when he finally steps into a TNA ring, and how Rampage does.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at a guy like Brock Lesnar, you look at Ken Shamrock back in the day. I mean, there are guys that are able to you know, use the God-given athletic gifts and knowledge they have in the one sport and transition it to the other. And I think it's awesome. Yeah. And I think it, you know, can give that more that aura of legitimacy as well. You know, I mean, when Shamrock first came in, he's coming off of, you know, a successful run in MMA in the early days of UFC, and they bill him as, you know, world's most dangerous man, and, you know, people could buy into that because, like, oh, this guy's a real deal. He's, you know, he's a shoot fighter, and it worked, you know. And two, it can also, you know, gains, I think, respect for pro wrestling. You know, obviously Brock had his ups and downs, but, I mean, look, fact of the matter is he went in there and won the UFC heavyweight championship
yes, he
twice.
Did.
And you can never take that away from him. And I think that, you know, had to make some people turn some heads and say, man, these guys are the real deal. You know, I mean, and guys like Angle and just phenomenal, legitimate athletes. But, you know, I honestly think that a lot of people just don't give pro wrestling the credit that it deserves because they have to have every ounce of that athletic ability in pro wrestling, but they also have to be portraying a character at the exact same time. And it is such a challenge and such an art form, and I just don't think a lot of people just still don't get it. But, I mean, the people that do obviously love it and love it for good reason.
Well, I think the best example, you know, of the whole crossover, I mean, when Brock Lesnar... And I didn't particularly care for his two matches with Triple H. I thought the second one was better than the first. But that match he had with John Cena last year was just unlike anything I had ever seen in my life. I mean, I just thought the storytelling, the fighting, I mean, it all looked terrific. And I think of that match specifically when I saw Rampage and Kurt Angle, you know, go face-to-face on Impact. And I'm like, these guys have a real chance to tell one hell of a story, and people know what a real fight looks like now. So if these two can channel that and maybe even channel some of what Lesnar and Cena did, I think they could do some big business with those two guys.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think Lesnar Cena was great. And when, you know, when Lesnar busted Cena open, you know,
yeah,
busted his nose, bro, that was great.
I was there.
And I look back too, to, you know, when Kurt Angle first came in to TNA Wrestling, mm-hmm, and his confrontation with Samoa Joe and
wow,
the headbutt, and, you know, and their lockdown match that was very, very MMA-driven.
Right.
So I know Angle can certainly work that style, and, you know, I think that he and Rampage have a great opportunity to do something special.
Certainly. Now, I'm going to really put you on the spot here as kind of like my final questioner. So and let's say the two biggest companies in their respective genres come to you. You got UFC, you got WWE. They slap a contract on the table each. Which one would you take?
Oh, man. I wish I would have that problem. Oh, a guy can dream, can he?
But yeah, but I know you like pro wrestling. I know you like MMA. But if you had to pick one, what are you going to do?
Honestly,
yeah,
I would have to go with WWE because, wow, I mean, growing up from day one, pro wrestling has been my passion. I've been hooked from when I can first remember. You know, I think the first thing I ever saw was Andre the Giant in a handicap match against like three guys, and he piled them up, sat on him, and waved to the crowd. I'm like, yep, this is pretty awesome. I've always just loved it, and I love calling it because it's so much fun to call. And there's because you can really sink your teeth into the characters and the storyline and everything else, and it really gives you that ability to really have fun with it and be imaginative and help the guys tell the story that they're telling in the ring. I also have such a respect for MMA, and obviously, you know, would jump at an opportunity to be part of UFC. But I think that I'm just better suited for sports entertainment and pro wrestling because that, you know, really since day one has been, you know, been my love. I remember when they when the old LJN WWF figures came out,
yes,
back in the day. I had the ring. I had the blue bar steel case, and I would sit there and, you know, and play out matches, and I would sit there and commentate the matches as I played with the figures. So, I mean, wrestling commentary has been, you know, just part of me, you know, since the early days.
Well, watching Jesse and Gorilla and you know, you talk about that, I mean, was that what made you want to become a broadcaster? Was that the inspiration?
It really was. You know, I really would have to say that it was, you know, just looking back at, you know, Gorilla, and even to this day, you know, if you listen to my commentary, you know, like when Aries would come off the top rope and, you know, to the outside, you know, I would say, oh, you know, lowered the boom on him, which is very much a gorillaism. You know, I just think there's still so much a gorilla monsoon in my commentary. And two, that's why I got kind of a kick being out there with Taz, because, you know, then he would be such an antagonist with me. And at times I'm like, man, I can't believe this is happening right now. This is like, you know, reliving my youth, but now only I, you know, I'm the one out there doing it. And, but yeah, just there's so many great calls that resonate. You know, if you look back to Hogan and Andre and Irresistible Force versus Immovable Object. And like I said, Jesse would give, you know, would side with Andre that whole match. But in the end, you know, you'll never forget Jesse saying, I never thought it could be done, Gorilla. Like, he had to give, you know, and like, I'll never forget that as long as I live. I mean, some of those calls are just so amazing to me, and the way that they help tell that story, and how much, you know, sometimes you almost remember some of those calls more than you remember some of the action itself from the match. And it just really had a powerful effect on me.
Oh, man. What about Hogan and Macho Man, WrestleMania 5, man? Tell me about that one.
Oh, love it.
Yes.
Love it. You know, and that's the thing. And I'll say this. I do really like, and I know they have the one night only pay-per-views, but I do really like that TNA wrestling is scaled back to four pay-per-views a year. Because, I mean,
old school.
Growing up, that's what I remembered of having, you know, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and you had months in between to build up great storylines. So, you know, I love that they're doing that. But yes, I mean, just unbelievable storytelling. They bring those two together as a team.
Right.
You know, you see them successful as a team. Then you see the seed of, you know, jealousy gets planted, and you kind of know the wheels are going to come off.
Oh, yeah.
And then what? I mean, that's one of the best backstage segments, and one of the first that I can remember where there was that, you know, just real believable attack backstage where Savage attacked Hogan in the medical area, you know, when Elizabeth was getting treatment, and you know, and Hulk was cut. And I mean, it just unbelievable. And that's another match that just to have that entire, you know, then real, you know, year of build between Savage winning the title at WrestleMania 4 and them going head to head, and the Mega Powers explode at WrestleMania 5. Was just awesome. But that's another one too where I just remember Gorilla and Jesse were really on top of their game.
Yes.
You know, Jesse calling Hulk Lust Hogan.
Right.
You know, and I'm not a Johnny completely. And then Gorilla, of course, you tell me you believe that doctored footage. You know, I just that's wrestling, you know.
I know, I
just love it. And I thought those two, you know, after Hulk had, you know, had that run of having to fight monsters, you know, at WrestleMania, like Bundy and Andre. Just the fact that Hogan and Savage went out and had such a great main event match. You know, Hogan had leaned down. He was really at the top of his game athletically, and I thought the two of them just, because there was so much story behind it, too, and it felt so personal.
Yeah.
That, you know, that was just, that's really one of my favorite matches of all time.
Well, you know, and the problem with today is, you know, a lot of fans are impatient, and I think the creative teams and respective companies just don't really have the patience. You know, they see that the fans get irritated, and they kind of give in, and it's boom, boom, boom. Give me the instant gratification now. But you look back at that storyline. I mean, the end of four, and everybody's so happy. Macho Man's got the belt. Elizabeth's up in the air, and then you fast forward a year later, and they're battling it out. They're bloody. I mean, wow. I mean, I wish that people had the patience that they had back then. Seriously.
Yeah, I do too. And that's why I have so much appreciation for what they did, you know, at Impact with the Aces and Ace storyline. That there was 9 months of build and twist and turn before Bully Ray was exposed as the leader of Aces and Ace and won the title at Lockdown. I mean, you know, that's just unheard of anymore in our business, as you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
And so I really thought that was well done, and it just has picked up momentum, you know. And I've said in interviews in the past few weeks that I think that it was the perfect move, you know, to do that and have Bully Ray as the champion with so much heat right going into Impact going on the road.
Right.
Because then, you know, the show's open and out comes the Aces and Eights with Bully with that, you know, looks like the cat that just ate the canary, got the big grin on his face.
Yes.
And I mean, it was perfect because the live crowds fed off of it so much, and it was just the perfect decision going in to being on the road, because it really gave, you know, the fans something to either love or hate.
I know. I think people were so frustrated too, because they're like, man, when are we going to get the payoff? And it's like, just shut up, just wait, be patient, and then you get the reveal, and it's great.
Yep. Yep. No, I was really, really a big fan of the way they did that, and they do have a great creative team there, and it is certainly a team effort, and you know, guys with in-ring experience and the agents and stuff are involved in those meetings too, and that's where you really see the two worlds come together. You got the guys with the creative mind, and if there's something that just doesn't quite work and make sense, you know, within ring psychology, that's when the wrestlers will step, well, maybe try this, that. And at the end of the day, you end up having an idea that's, you know, worlds better than what was originally intended. And it's just, it's a great team effort, and it was really refreshing to see the creative process there in my, you know, relatively short time there. But I think they do a lot of things right, and again, I really hope that, you know, I'll have a chance to be back.
I know. I'm going to say this before we end this interview. TNA, if you're listening, and I hope that you are, bring this man back. Open up your wallets and bring him back. Get him before WWE please. Snatches him up. Come on.
Please open up your wallet.
Open him up and bring Todd Kennelly back. Look, I feel like I could talk to you for hours just on late 80s, early 90s wrestling alone. But look, let's do this properly. People can find you where? They can get you on Twitter at Todd Kennelly. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Yep. HollywoodWrestling.com. Where else can people find you? What else do you want to promote?
Oh, you know, I'm on Facebook as well. And please, yeah, just, you know, follow me. I think Twitter's probably the best. But, yeah, do yourself a favor. Go on HollywoodWrestling.com, and they archive the episodes, and give that a watch, because you're going to definitely see some great pro wrestling, you know, kind of pure pro wrestling and taking it back a little bit to the old school. I think if you take the time to tune in and go on that site and watch some action, you know, you definitely, it's a refreshing thing to see. But, you know, just follow me and hang on for the ride, because who knows where we'll end up next. We'll see.
Exactly. And I need to go check out that Hollywood wrestling myself. Now, look, I'll tell you what, I feel I'm inspired now. One day I feel like I want to dedicate a whole show to like old school stuff. Would you be up for coming back and just talking straight old school stuff? What do you think?
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that, Todd Kennelly. You hear me?
You got it.
Thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it, man. I like I said, I feel like we could talk for hours, but I do appreciate it. We'll get you back on the show in the near future, and I want to wish you good luck in TNA. Damn it, you better bring this guy back. I'm telling you.
I appreciate it. Thanks, man. No, I had a blast. Thank you very much.
Thank
Always
you.
Always good rapping about wrestling.
Absolutely. Thank you, Todd.
You got it.
See ya. Wow, man. Whoa. Thank you so much, Todd. What a great, great interview. I had no idea that, I mean, you know, that he was so well-versed in the old wrestling. When he brought that up, you know, a lot of people that I guess that are older will talk about, you know, like the really old stuff, you know, from like the 70s and stuff. But when he specifically brought up Gorilla and Jesse, that just brought me back. So wow. That's all I got to say about that. Thank you, Todd Kennelly. Follow him on Twitter at Todd Kennelly. Tell him that you enjoyed this interview. Man, what a good one. All right, here's what we got to do now. We're going to bring Tom the Tree Man on here in the next about, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. We're going to take another quick break. We're going to come back in the show with Tom the Tree Man. So you're listening to The Shoot. We will be right back. And we are back. Got a little Take It Back Sunday bringing us back in. Man, they had... Let me bring this down. They just put out the 10-year anniversary of Tell All Your Friends, the acoustic show. That album was huge for me, man.
Wow.
It's hard to believe that it came out 10 years or a little over 10 years ago now. I met them one time. They were super good dudes. But anyway, this is The Shoot. We're back. Let's go ahead and get my buddy Tom the Tree Man on the show here. We're going to bring him on and see what he's got to say. And here on the show, we want to welcome back the one, the only, Tom the Tree Man. Tom, how are you, sir?
What's up, Gary? How are we doing today?
Dude, I'm doing great, man. This is historic for you, sir, because the last time you were on this show was over 3 years ago, almost 3.5 years ago, Tom. We were talking about all kinds of the crazy stunts that you were doing, and we had tried to get you on the show probably about 2 or 3 months ago now. We hit a roadblock, but now you're here.
Well, that's all thanks to Jack for... giving my show and kind of put me onto the family situation now.
So that's right. Let's set this up properly for the listeners. You are going to be back on radio, but you're going to be hosting your own show here in the coming weeks. You were on earlier with Alan on A Metal Church over in the Mix, and you and Augie are going to be doing your own program. And what are you guys, probably about a few weeks out from getting, 100% up and going?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. We're probably going to take over if it's okay with Jack, which I don't see a problem with it. He told me to just fit in where I thought it would be comfortable. And it's probably going to be Thursdays at 8 p.m. We're probably going to take over Tuttle's spot since he went ahead and he's heading actually out to San Antonio.
Oh, wow.
He worked at the Billy Madison show.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's cool that you mentioned that, because The Shoot actually used to be back when I, was able to do nighttime radio. The Shoot was on Thursdays at 8, and I got to tell you, that's a good slot to be in because a lot of people, they like, that prime time show. A lot of the great shows that are online are in the prime time space, and by God, if I could do it, I would. But no, that's a great spot, Tom. Now, what can people expect from you and Augie? I mean, what kind of show are you guys going to be doing?
Well, basically, we're going to be, definitely like we were doing today, there's going to be a lot of talk, but it's going to be, I'm going to have a lot of guests on, with me being, having family in the wrestling business, if I have a couple of those guys on, just for, to shoot the shit, basically. I'm not going to just talk about wrestling, I want to talk about their life and stuff like that. Plus, I wanted to, I'm actually working on getting sponsors, which I already got one, Smith's Auto Repair over there in Spring Hill. I already got him on board. And we're going to be working on that. Hopefully we can get enough that, I can spread the love around and go ahead and have them, at least get a couple and each of them being on each show sponsored out so everybody can at least get something back. The equipment that we're buying, ain't cheap.
No, it's not.
And we buy that out of our own pocket. I mean, I just to do the show yesterday, and I already had microphones, which you and Jack told me what to get, and the mixer that I'm working on, which I did not buy the mixer yet.
Right.
Actually, Alan's going to work with me on some other things on that. But, just to do hit the show today, I went and bought $188 worth of, two headphones and two microphones.
Wow.
Just that. So, I mean, that was just to do today because I'm going to go ahead and probably on Sunday so we get up and running, I'm going to just do the morning show because it's probably about a... Alan's about an hour away from me, about 2 hours away from Augie. So it's kind of hard to do, go up there with my kids and stuff, being up there for like 5 hours in between two shows. So, but we're going to, with Alan, he was cool with it. We're going to do the Metal Church from 10 o'clock till 12 o'clock and three-man show. But it's really going to be the whole ball and wax as far as, the 3 hours is going to be us three basically just kicking it and having hopefully you guys you and Ashton calling again, and I thought it was great radio today.
Yeah, man, I love the call, and bust balls is a fun thing to do, and also talk about other things. It's always fun to catch up. I mean, Tom, we should tell the listeners. I mean, you and I, we go back at least 3 years. I remember you know, you were one of the first people from that show, that, you know, Bubba's show, that you know, I was able to get in contact with, because at the time I was a fan of that program. And I said, man, this guy, this Tom the Tree Man, is a crazy some bitch. I said, my God, I got to talk to this guy. And we ended up being friends. I mean, it was great. I went down there for that TNA, that whole TNA fiasco at Universal Studios, and we ended up hanging out and everything. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. So it was cool to kind of make a friend out of the whole thing. You know, if nothing else, if I don't talk to anybody else from that show ever again, I'll be fine. But you gotta stay close with your friends.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I can still remember that. We went to TGI Fridays. It was actually my birthday.
Yes, it was.
And you and your, I believe it's your girlfriend at the time.
She still is.
Okay, sorry about it. I'm, you know, got to keep up on times a little bit.
No, I know. But, that's good.
But, you know, you guys took me out there for, we had a little birthday deal for me, a couple drinks, and, you know, really enjoyed it. Plus, you know, we also stayed in the hotel with a lot of the guys from TNA, which I told you, they were right there in the lounge right there. And I think you ran into my brother-in-law, Sean Warman, which is X-Pac. I think you ran into him, you said, also in the elevator. So
I sure did. I will say this about that, and this is all I'm going to say. He looked like he was having a blast. And I think that's all that needs to be said about that. But no, he was very polite. Very friendly. A lot of the wrestlers, man, they were all hanging out at that bar down there, you know, in the lobby. And there's just so many people that were outside. They were waiting to get their pictures and their autographs. I'm more of a picture guy. I don't know about you. I mean, because, you know, when you were working in radio, when you were doing, you know, the stunts and all that stuff, I'm sure, you know, you've come in contact with a lot of famous people. But for somebody like me at the time, you know, just being a fan, I'm more of a picture guy. I think pictures last a hell of a lot longer than autographs, in my opinion.
No, I agree with you, because number one, you have no idea, like, in 2 weeks where the hell that autograph went.
Yeah, if it's authentic.
I signed a lot of autographs, you know, working for Bubba when we did the Bubba Paloozas and stuff like that. And it was really nice to do that and meet a lot of the fans. I mean, you know, meeting Howard Stern and, you know, Gary and all those guys. I mean, that's a dream come true. But you know, the biggest thing, which I know you already know this, but a lot of people don't understand, mm-hmm. is once you meet a superstar, it's kind of like, you know what, after that, it's not, I mean, it's like your breath is already gone now. So you can, they're all just normal people. I mean, I remember when I was down with Hogan down in Miami, which I got a lot of heat for that, I was trying to help him out. His limo went on the wrong side of the place. I took him out the front side. Limo was on the back side.
I've heard you tell the story. It's great.
But we, you know, my brother's a big fan of Jeff Gordon, and I'm trying to get my brother on the phone because I'm sitting there with Jeff Gordon, RuPaul, Jim Kelly from the Buffalo Bills, Hulk Hogan, Jennifer Lopez, Mark Anthony. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? I was in the Big Show, Paul White. Right. I mean, it was great. You know, and as long as you look like you belong, they don't mess with you. But right. It's the people that come up there and they try to be so cocky and stuff like that. And I was, you know, with Hogan, you know, and he called, you know, back then he used to say, this is Tom, my buddy from Old Tampa. You know, now he calls me Tree Man.
Right.
But it's just amazing when you get to know these people, how they are. And it's not, you know, like, for instance, like, I'll put an example, like Hogan, he don't turn anybody down. He's so proud of being where he's at. And he's always respectful of people. Same thing with Sean. We did a down here probably about 2 weeks ago in Tampa, 2 or 3 weeks ago. He did after he got hurt, which you all know, he split his BH open again.
Yeah, we had him on the show probably about a week or two before that happened.
Yeah, he went ahead and we went over there at a VFW deal. Uh-huh. Not one thing. And there were kids coming up, I mean, that were, you know, anywhere from, you know, 2 years old all the way up to adults, you know, and he would stop he'd be talking on the phone or something, stop, put his phone down, sign an autograph.
Right.
I mean, they don't understand how much, you know, that guy I have extremely a lot of respect for, because not only that, I know him as family, I also know him as a person, and he's played it. I've never heard him tell a lie.
Right.
And that in itself is amazing to me. I mean, I tell a lot of lies, I'll be honest with you. But, He'll I've never heard him say anything bad or negative about anybody that you know, that he doesn't truly back up or mean.
Right.
And, and I'll be honest with you, he told me to go ahead and get away from the BTLS area because I was being mistreated so bad. But
certainly,
you know what? A lot of things I take on my own.
Right.
And the abuse ain't all real.
Well, yeah.
But you guys know that. But then on the outside, on the outside world, ever since I got a job with the county and started doing this, he basically he cut me loose. You know, except for doing a couple of stunts. I mean, even the fireworks stunt I'm not doing this year because he said he got PBR Ryan to do it. So. Let him go ahead and do it. There's only one Tom the Tree Man, so they can keep on trying to fill me. But so far, I mean, even though Augie's with me on a show,
right?
He can tell you nobody filled my spot yet.
Well, yeah, and that's totally true. First of all, sidebar: the first lie I ever heard you told was you said, "Gary, you got a good show, man." That's the first lie I ever heard you told me. And the second lie was telling me that that I was good at hosting a show. But anyway, but that's beside the point, Tom. This is very true. You know, and we don't have to get into a whole thing with this guy, but, you know, you were very unique on that show. I mean, your body took a lot of abuse. You did put your body on the line. I think to a certain degree it was a bit of a thankless job because, you know, I really don't think that all the guys were genuine. I mean, most specifically Bubba, you know, being genuine and appreciating, you know, what you were doing. I just don't, you know, I'm so glad now that you are out of that world because I think in the last year and a half, since all this stuff went down with Jack and everybody else, I mean, I think that a lot of eyes have opened up and I don't think that there's any coincidence that a lot of people have stopped tuning into that show.
Oh, I agree 100% with you.
Yeah.
And the good thing about, you know, with being on here now, Jack didn't ask me to do any stunts, so, you know, and he gave me a shot. So, I mean, that's worth it. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. I went a little bit on air this morning about, you know, how, you know, where I started with Big D back in 93.3, back hanging out with him and stuff like that. And, you know, and unfortunately he passed away, but he had a lot of respect from a lot of people. You ask anybody in radio, they knew who he was.
Right.
And that's the biggest thing. I thought, you know, hey, I'm going to start just like, Sal and Richard from the Howard Stern Show. I'll start off doing stunts, and eventually I'll get on. And, you know, he gave me and Augie one shot to fill in one time, and then Spice Boy said it was great.
Right.
You know, he said we pulled the notes up on it, and then nothing. And I asked him, you know, I mean, he gives everybody a show but the people that are loyal to him.
Yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate. And I want to direct everybody, and I hope Alan tweets this out sometime today, because you guys did some good radio this morning. I want to put you over for this, because I found it so great how honest you were and you know, the stories that you shared, you know, about your son and all these other things. I mean, you were telling some really, you know, crazy stories, you know, stuff that you were being so honest about, you know, that a lot of people wouldn't have the guts to go out and talk about. And you're talking about these things just open and honest. And I really appreciate that, you know, as a listener.
Well, I appreciate that. And that's the thing. I want people to know who I really am. I wasn't a mark for Bubba.
Yeah.
I wasn't I was a stunt man, that, you know, that was hoping to get a shot. Okay. My biggest thing is, you know, when I was getting told that I was giving out my name and stuff like that, I wasn't doing that, man. I can show you receipts to this day.
Right.
That I paid my bills. I paid some stuff, and this is the God's honest truth. Okay, I could probably show you some bills if I pulled them up in my archives.
Mm-hmm.
That I went to promos and stuff and paid for stuff when, you know, for drinks and stuff out of my own pocket when the bill stopped and people still wanted drinks.
Yeah,
you know, and I never asked for a dime back because, you know what, I was like, you know what, I'm being loyal to my boss, and it's just kind of screwed me in the end. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not going to talk bad about him as far as he did give me a shot, you know, that nobody else did as far as, you know, behind the scenes and stuff like that. But
sure.
Jack gave me the chance to have some airwaves, and I'm going to use them because I'm not going to lie to the fans. I'm going to let them know the truth as far as, you know, what kind of person I am, and, you know, and if they want to listen to me or back me, they can. If not, they can listen to him. I mean, I don't, you know, there's a lot of guys that Spice Boy still great friends with, Callahan still great friends with, you know, guys that they feel that, you know, he probably could have blocked you.
Right.
You know, this ain't Twitter. This ain't Twitter. This is life.
Yeah, exactly. He has a few people, Kool-Aid drinkers left that really will, you know, bang the beat of his drum. But I mean, have you run into any issues yet since announcing that you were going to be debuting over on The Mix? I mean, has anybody come to you and try to give you any shit or anything?
Wendy the plumber, I guess, commented on there, and then, and I guess supposedly, Porter said something, but you know, here's the thing. They don't know, you know, I'll be honest with you. Like I said, I'm not going to bash him or anything like that, but
sure.
I've been asking, for months, even probably about a year now to at least give me a shot on Radio I.O. You can't screw Radio I.O. up. You can curse, you can do whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's great talk, you know? And he never one time responded back.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, you know, let me do what I feel that I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, if he would have gave me what I wanted to, I mean, I'd probably still be fine. But give me a shot. Let me be out there. Now I got it, and like I told Jack, I'll be honest with you. I'll be straight up with him. You know, Jack was very honest to me today. He said, "Hey, if you have any, you know, if you get any heat or whatever, and you have to bail out." He goes, "I understand." He goes, "I know where you're coming from." Like,
well, yeah, I mean, look at what he went through too.
Yeah, in it till I get booted.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you'll find how much more freedom you have, you know, with internet radio, you know, with no restrictions, not being under somebody else's, you know, kind of direction and doing your own thing. I mean, whether it's The Mix or RadioFubar.com or like I have my own station that I run replays of my own show on. I mean, it's, you know, the freedom that you have to just do whatever the hell you want. You know, I come on here and I talk about my life, or I interview people like I'm doing right now, or, you know, just whatever it is. You'll find that when you get on that air, when you're cracking the mic for yourself, I mean, it's cool, you know, what you're doing with Alan and Augie and all them, but imagine when you and Augie first get your own show together, you know, and you guys are running the show there. There's so much freedom, Tom. You're not going to believe it, how much freedom you really have to just do whatever the hell you want.
Well, that's my biggest thing. And I want to have fun by doing it.
Right.
I don't want somebody, you know, coming on there like they got to be pressured. You know, I want them to come out there that they want to be on my show. I don't want to, you know, I threw a couple of tweets out there yesterday. And here's the thing, like Augie talked to me about it yesterday. He's like, "Oh, why don't you just call these people?"
Right.
I said, because, you know, Twitter's the new way of going now. You send it out there, you know, you have them email you back, you set up an interview, you go from there. So I don't want to sit there and call Hogan on the phone and say, "Hey, man, will you come on my show?"
Yeah.
You know, or Dick Hart or anything like that. I'd rather send it out there this way. It makes a presence for out there on Twitter saying, "Okay, you know what, this guy's following Tom Trino, must be a good guy, let me go ahead and follow him and also do an interview. If Hulk Hogan can do it, I can do it." You know,
certainly. So, you know, I expect great things from you guys. And like I said, the freedom of internet radio, there's nothing like it. I mean, I'll be honest with you. If somebody here in D.C. who's in radio said, "Look, Gary, you do a great show. We'd love to bring you on FM." I mean, of course, I would certainly, you know, look into that opportunity. But being on internet, man, I mean, there's just nothing else like it. When you can just do whatever the hell you want, man, the sky's the limit. You know, you control. As old shithead would say, you control your own destiny. You control
Absolutely.
It, man. It's all on you. If you want to talk about cutting down trees or whatever the hell is on your mind, man, that's what you do. It's up to you.
Well, Alan actually said something good, which really set my mind when we were talking last night and had at lunch today.
Right.
He said the idea is when you're on there, talk as you do at home.
Yeah.
You have nothing to get hurt by if you just continue talking. And just, you know, but my thing is, I told him, "Well, you know what, I don't want to, you know, in case we edit it or whatever, we don't have to edit it that much, so let's not curse." And he goes, "Yeah, but how many times do you really curse at home?"
Yeah.
You know, which he's right. You curse at home all the time, so it's going to be the same thing you're doing on the radio, except it's easy to edit out. But,
yeah.
You know, and that sat in my mind this morning. So when I came on air this morning, I was like, boom, I was set like, before we were even on air, we were talking, and then we just continued talking when it started. and it felt like I was just sitting there with friends just bullcrapping at the bar.
Yeah, you know? That's the great thing about
it. That's what it feels like. Yeah, that's what it feels like. And it felt like, man, this is awesome. I can say whatever I want or talk about whatever I want and go with it. And it's a topic that we're all watching. Plus, I don't know if you've been to Allen's yet, but what a fantastic area setup he has. He has a great setup behind us. I mean, it's a big TV. I don't know if it's a 60-inch or bigger, but it's great because we could watch the news and the updates and all that stuff, the I-4 stuff, and it was great. I mean, I felt like I was sitting back in a professional studio.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere was so great. It was unbelievable.
I hear he's got a nice place. I have to get down to Florida again. I've been putting it off and putting off. I just, you know, work has been just unbelievably crazy, but I have got to get back down there. I know I was down there in 2011. Our schedules didn't quite line up so greatly, but we got to figure out a time where I can get down there and then meet with not only just you, but everybody, you know, that's exactly associated with the mix and whatnot, and just hang out and have a good time. I mean, I would love to do that.
Well, we should do maybe we'll all get together, like do when you get down here, or, you know, we set it up. We do basically a round robin, almost like a telethon deal. You know, we'll all sit in there for all day. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's on everybody's show for
that
the whole
would be
day.
Awesome.
And just, you know what I'm saying? Just crank it out. And then, you know what? We can maybe collect some donations or something for, some charities. I'm trying to help people out that really need it. You know, I was talking to a couple people the other day about that. And I'm like, you know, you have people that are begging for, oh, I can't feed my kid, but they're out there smoking Newport cigarettes at $6 a pack.
Yeah.
Can't feed the kid. You know, if you at least got a bad smoking habit, buy the 305s for $3 and change or whatever, and the other $3 feed your kid.
Yeah,
you know,
it's unreal.
These people that I don't believe it should be, like AFDC and stuff like that. They don't need food stamps to not have a job. Coordinated child care. Put a big example. And I hope I'm not tying you time up too long.
No, you're okay.
But coordinated child care, okay, they give it to a person that doesn't have a job.
Right.
So they can find a job. But if you have a job, they don't give it to you.
Oh, okay? Geez.
Does that make any sense? I don't think so.
No.
If you don't have a job, your kid don't belong in daycare.
Yeah. I mean, how can you make it happen?
Yeah. You have people that are out there, you know, I'll put an example. My son-in-law, making 10.06 with the county, okay? And my daughter, she's trying to get a job, okay?
Right.
And they have a child. They can't afford daycare on 10.06 an hour. That right there should be, hey, coordinated child care should be stepping in and helping them, but they don't. They'll rather, if they didn't have no job, they would set them up with coordinated child care. So you're telling me if I live off the state, I can go ahead and get free child care, but if I work and I'm doing a legit thing and I'm trying not to beat the system, you won't help me out?
Yeah.
That's wrong.
It's really unfortunate, and I don't know, you know, how they do it up here versus down there. I don't know if it's a countrywide thing or what, but somebody's got to get together and just figure that whole thing out, you know, lay it out on the table and figure out, you know, just what in the hell is going on and why these things are able to happen. And it's just, it's unreal to me.
Exactly. And then you got to figure, you give an Obama phone, you know, probably half of those guys are selling drugs and they're using that Obama phone for drugs.
Yeah. And I'm sure these aren't just some, you know, shit phones. Are probably nice phones with
yep.
data connections and all that other stuff.
Exactly.
It should be a privilege, not something that you have to have. I mean, if you can't afford it, then you can't have it. I that's just the way I see it.
Yep. I agree. I mean, you see, but that's where we come up with where we were raised and how we were raised.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, back when I was a kid, I went to a school, 16th Street Middle School in Medellin, and I got, when I was bad, they pulled me in the office, they gave me a SWAT, sent me back to my room, and then I had to bring a note home saying I got swatted today by my principal.
Wow. I never got a swatting, as you put it. I can't imagine what the hell that's like. I do remember having a babysitter one time, and my mother swears up and down that this did not happen, and I remember because I freaking lived it, but there was a babysitter that, like, if the school called and I had a bad day, I got my ass whipped with a 2x4. That was brutal, man.
Well yeah, but see, that's what I'm saying. That's what needs to be done these days. You don't you don't have the same thing when it comes to these kids anymore.
No, everything is playing on Xbox and PlayStation. That's the babysitters of this country.
Exactly, and everybody has a phone. It doesn't matter what age they are anymore.
Oh yeah, you can have 9 and 10 year olds with phones texting it up, and yep. What the hell does a 9 year old need with a freaking phone?
One, you don't, and two, that's how they get in trouble with probably pedophiles. They get online. Most of the phones now are free internet, and you get on there, and the parents don't watch them. They don't control them.
No, they're not watching. They're not paying attention. They don't give a shit, you know? I mean, there's good parents out there, but it's certainly the bad, I think, outweighs the good in many situations, and people need to take a real long look before they, get into the world of parenting. It's very unfortunate.
Exactly. Oh, I agree with that. And that's another, you go back to that too. You have to, you got to figure that the parents are a lot of the reason why these kids do what they do. They, you punish them, they have bad grades, you take their phone away from them. Okay, well, first of all, they should have a phone at 9 or 10 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, you should be able to understand how to dial somebody's phone number. You should be, I would say, at least 8th grade or higher.
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, look, when you don't raise them, when you raise them on things like Xbox and shit like that, you get kids like Augie that grow up.
Exactly. He needs his phone taken away, that guy.
Yeah. Oh God. but look, Ty. So you guys are in a couple of weeks are going to start this show up. You guys are going to be over on the mix. You're going to be doing some good things. I for one am looking forward to it. I don't know. Quite what to expect out of you two, but I can imagine that if it's anything like today, you guys are going to excel and you guys are going to do some great radio. Now, if you can just convince that guy to talk a little bit, I mean, you know, then you guys would be really good because he didn't say a whole lot. Tom.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure you're still there. Yeah. No, he was not very, you got to get him talking a little bit more. Even if he's just busting your balls, get that guy to talk a little bit more.
Exactly. I'm going to definitely work on more of that. But yeah. All right, Gary, hey, I don't want to hold up your time too much, buddy.
That's all right, man. We're wrapping up anyway, man. I appreciate you coming on and all that stuff.
Nope, no problem. And like I said, I'm glad that you were helping me out a little bit, and definitely Alan was helping me out. So I'll definitely be talking to you soon and posting some more stuff, and we'll be back on next Sunday again with Alan.
Yeah, and finally, where can people find you on Twitter? You got a couple accounts going. Give us a quick plug. Yeah,
well, we just started the Tree Man Show 1.
Right.
On Twitter, and then you got the Real Tree Man also. You can do either one, but I like to get the Noah Righty and everything boosted up on the Tree Man Show 1. This way we can get more followers on there if that's good with you guys. So.
All right, Tom. Well, look, thank you so much for your time. I wish you the best of luck, and we will talk to you soon, sir.
I appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Todd Kennelly. Thanks to Tom the Tree Man. Follow me on Twitter, at Gary Cantrell. Let me know what you thought about the show. And visit us, theshootonline.com. We will see you next week. Good night.